Happy hump day. Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets presented by So Rare, live here on our FTN Network YouTube page, also Game Plus Network. Chris Meany here with you. Always appreciate you guys taking the time to hang out with me here today. We have a few MLB props around the diamond. It's been a weird couple days, hasn't it? Like last night was strange. No NHL playoffs, no NBA playoffs. Today there's a lot of action around the diamond in Major League Baseball, early action. So we're going to take a look at a couple late night games for the Game Plus Network crew. We've got a couple pitching props. Going to talk about the Blue Jays taking on the Milwaukee Brewers. We did not get Yusei Kikuchi. That's why I don't mess around with Kikuchi. Actually had a pretty good outing yesterday, but he did not get the strikeouts that we needed him to get. So hopefully we rebound here with a few pitching props to attack. We are going to dive a little bit deeper into the Stanley Cup final matchup between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Florida Panthers. Got some series props, some goal leaders, some point leaders, two players that I'm taking a look at, and then some deeper, like just like little sprinkles, and they're long shots. We get some player versus player point props and goal props. We got a fun little Bet365 future that I wanted to show you guys. Who is going to get the Stanley Cup first? Let me actually change that up a bit. Who is going to get handed the Stanley Cup first? Because we know Mark Stone, Barkov, these guys are going to raise the cup first as captains of their teams, and then they're going to hand it over. So we're going to have a little bit of fun with that prop, and we'll dive into some other NHL aspects as well when it comes to the Stanley Cup Finals. We're going to dive deeper into football, wide receivers, fantasy football. Yesterday, we took a look at the top 24 from an underdog fantasy perspective, ADPs over at Underdog Fantasy. And I think I presented my top 12 wide receivers, but I did it pretty quickly. I'm always just rapid fire at the end of shows. Today's going to be a great balanced show. I got a good feeling about today's show, Game Plus Network. We're going to have it balanced out for you. But I'm going to dive into 13 to 24. So wide receiver twos. Going to show you some wide receiver sleepers. And what's the definition of a sleeper? In my opinion, it's just somebody who's going to outdo their draft position, ADP, average draft position. That's what we've been showing you guys over at Underdog. And, you know, you could take ADP with a grain of salt. You know, in your drafts, you should certainly have your own rankings projections. If you don't have your own or projections, we got you covered over at FTMFantasy.com. Heck, you want to do some underdog best ball drafts over at UnderdogFantasy.com. We have you covered over there. We have the guide with rankings and stacks and players to attack and strategy overall, strategy pieces. Randall's doing a draft on our FTN Network YouTube page every single week. They did one last night. We're going to do one every single week on Mean Streets as well. But the reason I'm showing you this, I just wanted to show you guys where, you know, the value is at the, you know, other positions. We've done quarterbacks and running backs and just kind of show you, oh, this player is going a little bit too high. This player is going a little bit later than I would expect. I think he's a good play. You can reach on him a little bit. So I think you take the ADP with a grain of salt, but if you're drafting at home with your buddies in your home league, these guys and girls are most likely going to have themselves a little bit of a sheet from some random site. Hopefully it's from ours, FTNFantasy.com, projections, rankings, and they're just going to go by ADP. And you know, guys are going to be kind of buried. So that's the goal here, to try to, you know, seek some value and things like that. So hang on for some wide receiver talk. We'll dive deep into the 24. And I'm looking at players outside the top 30 at the wide receiver position. You may not think they're a sleeper, but again, I think that they're going to finish better than where they're getting drafted. For example, Christian Watson. Can I call Christian Watson a sleeper? Probably not. He's going outside the top 20, 25, you know, in some spots. Underdog Fantasy, I've seen him outside the top 25 at the wide receiver position. I have him as a top 20 wide receiver. I think he finishes a top 15 guy. And you guys are probably sick of me talking about Christian Watson, because last year I talked about him quite a bit and it didn't work out until the end of the season. So you may have won some consolation brackets with Christian Watson. I know I did. But he was a guy that I was aggressive picking up off the waiver wire, and it took some time to kind of get going, but he was phenomenal down the stretch of the season. He went through like a 4 or 5 game stretch with like 5, 6 touchdowns. And I know it's not Aaron Rodgers and it's Jordan Love. I'm not that worried about it. I think he's an alpha wide receiver. There's a lot of question marks around the team when it comes to the wide receiver position. They got a lot of young pieces now all of a sudden on that squad, you know, sophomore wideouts, rookie wide receivers, Romeo Dubs, Reed, that they drafted this past year, two rookie tight ends. I think they're going to run the rock quite a bit, but they may have to throw it more than they would like with Jordan Love. And I think Watson's going to be just fine, but I would view him as a sleeper. He's probably more of a breakout candidate or an undervalued wide receiver, but again, sleeper, outperforming their average draft position. That's how I view it. It's just a trendy term that people use in their articles to get clicks. Let's be honest. That's what it's all about. Okay. So this is the time of the year, though, where you overreact with just film and footage. You know, guys looking great at camp. Thighs are tremendously huge from the offseason workouts. You're in all the A.J. Dillon. Remember A.J. Dillon's thighs? It's like if Leonard Fournette's thighs, Saquon Barkley's thighs. It's all it is. It's thigh season, and it's like overreact season. But I wanted to show you something that I saw last night on social media of the Buccaneers training camp with the two quarterbacks. Of course, Tom Brady is gone now. Kyle Trask, who the Bucs took last year in the NFL draft, competing with Baker Mayfield, who's bounced around quite a bit, former first overall pick from the Browns. And I thought he did some good things last year with the Rams, and he's going to be fighting for a starting job with Tampa Bay. But it did not go all that great. Quan's got the tape. Let's roll footage from yesterday's practice in Tampa Bay. Oof, not great. Are we overreacting? Is it just a little bit of rust? There's no defense out there, if you didn't notice. There's no defenders on the field. Also, no Mike Evans, no Chris Godwin. The 87, certainly not Gronk. So, you know, throwing to second and third team offenses there, but not great. I mean, those are just passes you got to complete, right? Quan said it before we gone on. That's just timing. It's, you know, timing is off. It's early. I'm sure they're going to get the rhythm there. But it may be a long season in Tampa Bay. They still have some very skilled players on the roster. Of course, offensively, you think of some of the skilled players that they have, as I mentioned, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. But Mike Evans, very boom or bust last season, extremely boom or bust. He had like three or four touchdown game. What was it? Week 17, a massive game where he kind of finished as a wide receiver too. But if he doesn't have that game, he's finishing outside the top 30 at the wide receiver position. So he had that massive game. But again, there's going to be some growing pains. I think the only Buck player I want, aside from Rashad White, who I do like, I think, you know, he's a big winner from the NFL draft. The Bucs didn't really do anything to bring in, you know, competition at the running back position, and they cut Leonard Fournette. So I think he's in for a ton of touches. He may not be super efficient, but, you know, he can flirt with 50 grabs again. He certainly did it last year as a rookie. He's impressive. But it may be a long season for this offense, this team. I think the Saints are the team to win inside the division. The Bucs, I mean, we're not sprinkling that. There's no chance. I think Carolina may impress some people or surprise some people. And I think Atlanta as well, offensively, may be able to bring it. But the Saints are certainly the best team in the NFC South. They have a top 10 defense. I'm not completely sold that Derek Carr is the answer, but I do believe he's an upgrade at the quarterback position from what they had last year. I do believe that the Saints will win the division. I think they're going to make the playoffs, and they may win a game or two. I mean, the defense is solid, and the offensive line is really good, but I don't know how I feel about Mike Evans with Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask. Baker was number six there, tossing some balls out of rhythm at all. Overreaction? Maybe. It's May 31st. Maybe overreaction. Don't even have the studs on the field, but not a good start. And you could hear the grumblings. Can you hear it? That was from ABC News, by the way. You could hear the grumbling. I heard them, and I didn't hear them the first couple of times that I watched them on social media, but I heard them as I was watching now on the show here, Mean Streets. I could hear, that was a brutal pass. Oh, wow. Should have been. How are you going to be able to catch that pass? Maybe a long year in Tampa. Quan, that's for you. That sprinkles for you. 150-1 to win the Super Bowl, the Buccaneers. No chance. No chance at all. We're going to break, switch gears a little bit, talk some NHL Stanley Cup finals, and we'll dive back into football in just a little bit. Hang tight. We'll be back in a couple. Okay, let's talk a little Stanley Cup final action. Of course, we all know by now it's the Vegas Golden Knights and the Florida Panthers, and it's getting underway Saturday in Las Vegas. Minus 135 for the Golden Knights, favored in game one, a total of 5.5. The Panthers at plus 115, and Vegas favored to win this series at minus 130. I like Vegas. I like Vegas to win the Stanley Cup. I think that this is going to be a phenomenal finals. I think both teams, I mean, what can you say about both teams? They're obviously feeling it getting to this point, you know, Florida being down 3-1 against the Bruins and coming back and winning that series and then beating the Leafs in 5 and then sweeping Carolina, and then Vegas as well, losing game one, got spanked home ice in game one against the Jets, went on to win 4 straight after that. They handled the Oilers, who I thought was a team that was going to go to the Stanley Cup finals and win the Stanley Cup. and they handled the Edmonton Oilers. I don't want to say easily, but they did beat them in six, and I thought they were certainly the better team in that series. And any questions about Aiden Hill coming into that series and even Bobrovsky coming into the first round, I mean, both of those guys have been the best goaltenders in the Stanley Cup playoffs. They're 1-2 in goals saved above average, according to Natural Stat Trick. Both of their numbers, I think I rattled them off yesterday on this show, they're both very, very similar. 5-5 numbers and overall numbers, 5-5 save percentages for both of these guys are fantastic. And for Vegas, you know, in the last round, you know, up 3-0 in Dallas and, you know, foot off the gas just a little bit, but, you know, spanked them when it mattered at in game six. So they've both been coming in red hot. You know, as I said yesterday, Florida, the best team in the NHL last season, Vegas, the best team in the Western Conference this season. You know, the President's Trophy curse that people talk about, three of the last five Stanley Cup winners, you know, they won the President's Trophy the year before they won the Stanley Cup. This could apply again this year with Florida winning the President's Trophy last season, the Avs the year before with the Cup, and the President's Trophy the year before that, Tampa and Washington on that list as well. But both of these teams, you know, they got great defenders, Alec Pietrangelo, Shea Theodore. Offensively, those guys can bring it. A breakout campaign from Brandon Montour. Aaron Ekblad's been pretty quiet, but he's a guy that can certainly bring it offensively. They got a lot of sandpaper on the blue line as well, guys that will finish checks, block shots, Radko Gudas, Braden McNabb. Both goalies, as I mentioned, have been strong, and they both teams have strong third lines. Like, three lines deep. Like, Sam Reinhardt is a proven 20-goal scorer playing on the third line. First power play, but third line. Riley Smith and William Karlsson, these guys have been terrific here in the playoffs, especially in the last two rounds in particular. They play the shutdown role. They did a good job against McDavid and company, and I thought they held their own really against Jason Robertson's line. Robertson had a good series. Hintz was quiet. Pavelski didn't do a whole lot. And Karlsson and Riley Smith, those guys not only shut them down, but they produced offensively. Then you got Stone and Stevenson on that second line, and Marchessault and Eichel have been great up on that top line. Ivan Barbashev has been a great addition to the Vegas Golden Knights as well. He's got a Stanley Cup on his resume. And then over on the Florida side, I mean, what can you say about Matthew Tkachuk and Sam Bennett? Both of those guys, terrific on the second line, firepower. They do everything. They finish their checks. They're hard to play against. They're both, you know, I don't think they're both pass-first guys. Bennett's certainly a shoot-first player, but Matthew Tkachuk has got some playmaking abilities to his game. There's no question about that. And then Barkov and Verhaeghe have been really good. And I thought Duclair had a really strong series. Didn't have the points to show for it, but I thought he had a strong series. So what should we bring up first? Bring up the goals, like just the futures here for the most goals. So this is from FanDuel. I shop around. I wanted to give you guys the best possible odds. Of course, our prop shop is free over at ftmbets.com. You just like Google search, you type in whatever you want, and you know, it'll all pop up there and you'll get the best odds. It'll save yourself a lot of time and a lot of cash. But I thought the best odds really were over at FanDuel. So Matthew Tkachuk is the favorite to lead the Stanley Cup Finals in goals at +390. Carter Verhaeghe's at +550. Jack Eichel's there at 7-1. Marchessault is at +750. Barkov and Stone, the two captains of the squads here, at 10-1. Bennett at 12-1. Reinhardt at 12-1. Stevenson at 17. William Karlsson, who was tied with Jason Robertson in the series against the Stars for the most goals, at 20-1. Riley Smith at 21-1. And then Anthony Duclair at 32-1. Now, yesterday on the show, and Dangle Batselli, we talked about him at 45-1. So that number is now gone. I think it's still a decent sprinkle at 32-1. You know, you're not going to get that 45 anymore, but I'm just talking like 0.25 units or something like that. But that's probably the value. You know, Riley Smith at 21-1, you know, former Panther, that's a fun narrative. Carter Verhaeghe as well. Those two guys, Florida let go to Vegas in the expansion draft a few years ago, and I'm sure they're regretting that. But I think maybe the best long shot would be Duclair and Riley Smith. And let's transition over to what I'm going to roll with. And there's a lot here that I'm going to throw at you guys. But so you see on the left, and I did this in the last round as well, it certainly worked out for Jonathan Marchessault for the most points at 18-1 for the most points in that series. And Jonathan Marchessault has been really strong. I'm just going to read you something that I had heading into round three. This is what he did in round two. He led all skaters with 34 shots and 27 scoring chances. His 5 goals and 46 shot attempts ranked second. His 15 high danger chances ranked fourth. And he was fifth in expected goals behind Roope Hintz. At 5-5, Marchessault was tied with Hintz in round two with 19 shots, 13 high danger chances. And he had the 4 goals. that was just round two. So he was a star in round two. He was very quiet in the regular season, very quiet in round one, but he was a star in round two, and he was certainly a star in round three as he led the series in points. So I'm going to do a full unit on everything you see to the left. I'm going to do Marchessault for the most goals. That's at FanDuel at plus 750. I think DraftKings is hanging 6-1. I'm going to do Jonathan Marchessault most points. I think that's at DraftKings at 13-1. I think FanDuel's got 12 or 11. And then I'm going to do the same on the other side, Carter Verhaeghe. Both of these guys are shooters. Verhaeghe is second at 5-5 in these playoffs in points with 13. Marchessault is first at 5-5 in these playoffs in points with 14. Overall, they have 17-15. Marchessault's got 17 and Verhaeghe's got 15. But they're both shooters. They're both volume shooters. Verhaeghe's not on that first power play. I'd like to see him on that first power play. Bennett overtook him. He's on that first power play, but he's with pass first player in Alexander Barkov. And Jonathan Marchessault is on that first power play, and he was bumped to that first unit, I think, in game two against the Oilers. And it's been a great decision by Bruce Cassidy to put him on that top spot. Jack Eichel, you know, is a playmaker in his own, and I think he can score, certainly. But I view him as a pass-first guy as well. So I'm taking a look at both of these guys. In terms of goals, Marchessault's got 9. You know, Carlson's got 10. Matthew Tkachuk has 9. And you have to go down a little bit for Verhaeghe. Most of his production has come 5-5, as I mentioned. He's got actually every point but 2. 13 of the 15 have come 5-5 for Carter Verhaeghe. He's got the 6 goals there at all strengths. But those are the shooters. Those are the guys that I like to score and to lead the series in points. On the right side, you see long shots, Riley Smith at 21-1. Again, a volume shooter. Yes, he's on that third line. Yes, he's on that second power play, but he's going to play a lot with William Karlsson. And they're most likely, my opinion, going to be asked to kind of shut down Verhaeghe and Barkov. I think that's the way that Paul Maurice is going to go. I think... I think Bruce Cassidy is going to go that way with William Karlsson and Riley Smith trying to shut down the Verhaeghe and Barkov line. And I think that could just create offense. I really just think when those two lines are matched up, we could see a lot of production on the ice. Then the others are long shots. So if you missed out on the 45-1 for Duclair, I still think it's decent at 32-1. Shea Theodore for the most points in this series at 65-1. Certainly that is a long shot, but he's on that first power play unit. We've been taking the over 1.5 and 2.5 shots for Shea Theodore. I really do like the fact that he is on that first power play unit. The Panthers do have a leaky penalty kill. Vegas's power play is okay. It's certainly much better now that they have Mark Stone in their lineup. And I think Theodore is much better for the power play than Pietrangelo. I just think he's a better playmaker. Petro is more of like a shoot first guy. And Theodore is really, you know, he gets his opportunities because he's a terrific skater and he can join the rush, but he's also, you know, a great playmaker and he's got good vision. And that's why I think he's quarterbacking that top power play. So I think at 65-1, we could see it. We almost hit 100-1 for Evan Bouchard for the most points in round two against the Golden Knights. He was 1 point off. Like, we could see that. Of course, the power play is not as lethal in Vegas as it was in Edmonton. I mean, they had a historic season when it comes to the power play, like 33-34%. But Theodore, 65-1 for the most points. Anthony Duclair, 75-1 for the most points. So again, those are long shots. I do the full unit on everything on the side there on the left, and then half a unit on the long shots there. And the props will be a full unit for me. I don't feel as strong, I'll be honest with you guys, I don't feel as strong about some of these as I did in the last round. We had 4 for 4 that we brought on this show, and they're all 2-unit plays. These are all 1-unit plays for me. I got Eichel more points than Matthew Tkachuk at plus 120. I got Eichel more goals than Matthew Tkachuk at plus 100. I got Barkov more goals than Mark Stone at minus 120. And then I got Sam Bennett more points than William Karlsson at minus 120. Bats. But Bennett, you know, with Tkachuk on that first power play, I think he can fall into some points. Carlson's been on that first power play, and then Chandler Stephenson has also been on that first power play. So it's been, you know, a little bit of both guys. I think, honestly, Carlson's probably better suited for that first power play, but I am going to lean with Bennett to have more points. And I just think for Eichel, you know, the attempts have really been there for him. You know, he didn't score once at all in the Dallas series, but he hit a bunch of bars. So I think it's not like he's not having a great playoff, right? He's got 6 goals. He's got 18 points. He's got 59 shots. He's got 97 shot attempts. That's at all strength. So he is getting his opportunities. And I just think Marchessault is going to continue to pile up some points. So they kind of piggyback off of each other, right? They correlate well. They're 5-5 together and on the power play. I think that's all we have. We'll break, and we have a fun little Bet 365 prop for you guys as well. And then we'll revisit Conn Smythe in case you missed yesterday's show. So we'll take another quick break for the people here for football talk. We're going to get to it after the break. We got the NFL talk coming in the next block here. One quick more hockey segment here for you guys. And Mehdi, I know you had the question about do ties count in this market or depends on the book. I think it does depend on the book, but for the straight up like player versus player, like Quan, if you have that again with some of these props, you know, player versus player, like on the bottom there, if that's just a tie, it'll just be a void, right? You'll just get your money back. But for those who had Jason Robertson for the most goals in the series, in the last round at plus 650, they would have earned a little bit of cash because he was tied for first with William Karlsson. You wouldn't get the full return, but you would get a little bit of that. So it just evens itself out a bit. But the props, you will have to get a winner. You know, they could be voided there. So for the Bet365 users, I know in Ontario and the Toronto area, Game Plus Network crew, you guys can get into this market if you want. It's very degen. I've never seen anything like this before. Do we have it here? The Stanley Cup handoff. And this, again, is from Bet365. So Sergei Bobrovsky at plus 190. Jonathan Marchessault at 500, plus 500. Jack Eichel also 5-1. William Karlsson at plus 750. Mark Stahl at 10-1. Matthew Tkachuk at 10-1. Braden McNabb. It's a weird name, I think, to be on there at 16-1. Also Shea Theodore at 16-1. Riley Smith, 18-1. Eric Stahl, 22-1. Alex Pietrangelo, 40-1. And Eric Ekblad. So if Vegas wins the Stanley Cup, Mark Stone will have it. Who will he pass it off to first? I got a feeling he's going to go Jonathan Marchessault. You know who's not on this list that I would like to see? Aiden Hill, and we'll get to him in just a second. But Jonathan Marchessault at plus 500. You know, Marchessault has been there since day one. William Karlsson has been there since day one. Riley Smith has been there since day one. You know, Jack Eichel has never won a Stanley Cup. He's a superstar player. You know, you could make the case for him, but I'm not. I think Marchessault. And it's got to be one of those misfits, right? It's got to be one of those original three that have been there since day one, and against Florida as well, right? It would be a really cool moment. And I think something that these captains are certainly thinking about, Mark Stone, especially if they won the cup in Florida. Let's hand it off to Jonathan Marchessault, especially if he continues to have this sort of run, like I think he's going to. So if he has a great Stanley Cup final, like he did in round three and in round two, maybe he wins Conn Smythe, and maybe he's just the star of the final. So that would be the sprinkle that I would go with. On the Florida side, I'm going to bring this up one more time, Quan. For example, like Eric Stahl's already won a Stanley Cup. You know, sometimes you see these veteran players, I think of Ray Bourque, right? When Ray Bourque joined the Colorado Avalanche and the Avs won, Joe Sakic went and, you know, gave it to Ray Bourque. Eric Stahl, if he didn't have a cup, I'd go that route. Is Mark Stahl like that big of a deal that he's going to get the Stanley Cup first from Alexander Barkov? I just don't think so. I could see Matthew Tkachuk at 10-1, you know, because he really changed the dimension of this team. He changed everything, the look of it, the face of it. This, as I mentioned, this was the best team in the NHL last season. They were bounced early in the playoffs. Matthew Tkachuk, a new member there. He's such a leader. He's had so many big moments here in the Stanley Cup finals. I think for me at 10-1, you know, Bob at plus 190 does make a lot of sense, but we're not going to do that. It's just plus 190. Like I could see it, especially if he just continues this run. But what if it's a high scoring series and Matthew Tkachuk just has a couple more game winning goals? So 10-1, and also a little sprinkle if we're looking for value. 50-1 ain't bad here for Aaron Ekblad. This is a guy that's been there for a long, long, long time. He suffered some pretty significant injuries over the course of his career. Seasons cut short. He may even have a Norris Trophy on his resume if one of his seasons weren't cut short due to an injury. So I think a little bit of a sprinkle there in Aaron Ekblad, but what a weird little market there. As for Conn Smythe, going to bring this back up one more time. We have Jonathan Marchessault at plus 31-1 in the tracker. I still think if you want to get involved in this market now, tip your toes in the water for the first time, I think Vegas is going to win the Stanley Cup. So I think Marchessault at 7-1 is pretty decent. Now, if you already have the 31-1, take a look at Aiden Hill. Take a look at Aiden Hill at 12-1. These are the numbers compared to Sergei Bobrovsky. All strengths. A 935 save percentage for Bob, a 937 save percentage for Hill, a 2.21 goals against average for Bob, a 2.07 for Aiden Hill. Aiden Hill had the two shutouts in the last series. He's coming in absolutely red hot. He's just feeling it at the moment. The goal saved above average is in favor of Bob. And if you take a look at the 5-5 numbers, very, very similar as well, but in favor of Aiden Hill. a 951 save percentage. Actually, they're dead even. 951 save percentage for both guys, a 1.58 goals against average for Hill and a 1.52 goals against average for Bobrovsky. So we know how good Bob has been. He's played three more games, almost 300 more minutes, but it doesn't matter. It does not matter if Aiden Hill outduels Bobrovsky and he gets a shutout or two and Vegas wins the Stanley Cup. Do not be shocked, because again, I think it's completely wide open here for Vegas. Whoever could win the Stanley Cup, I think it's just completely wide open. Thank you, Kwan. Again, Eichel, Marchessault, Stone, Carlson, it's all right there. I would say the tie would go to the goalie, and voters will heavily weigh what happens here in the Stanley Cup Finals. So I think that's, for me, at 12 to 1, I think it's not bad. Go Sharks. Lee. Sharks could be relegated to the WHL. I don't think so. I think they're going to get themselves a pretty good player here in the draft. But yeah, the rebuild is on in San Jose. And I know that you're a big Sharks and Warriors guy, so I was actually thinking about you the other day. So this is the 10th time a metro area has had teams play in the NBA and the NHL finals. Of course, we got two Southern teams, the Miami Heat in the NBA finals. I think we'll have a tougher task to win the championship in the NBA than the Florida Panthers in the Stanley Cup. But the 10th time, and just the first time since 2016, your Warriors and your Sharks, because I always hear you talk about both of them, but this would be the first time ever if both teams in Florida went on, metro area teams went on to win the Stanley Cup and the NBA championship. All right, enough NHL talk for now. You guys are here for the football talk. We're going to break. We're going to dive into the top 24 wide receivers, underdog ADP, my overall ranks, and we got some sleepers for you as well. And for the baseball crew, we're going to scan the diamond. We got a couple MLB props. We'll be back in a couple. Hang tight. Football talk, wide receivers, underdog fantasy. I want to lead here first, Kwan. I know we've done this before, but we'll do it a little bit quicker this time around. We'll dive deeper into my thoughts with my rankings. But underdog fantasy, I wanted to show you guys the top 12. I should show you the top 24, but we'll start here with the top 12 in terms of ADP. Again, this is best ball. You draft, you forget it. People are willing to reach. Stacks are important as well. But no real surprises on this board. Justin Jefferson, 1.2. Ja'Marr Chase, 2.2. Tyreek Hill, 4.4. Cooper Kupp, who did lead all wide receivers last year in fantasy points per game and targets per game, despite missing half the season. But the Rams didn't do a whole lot to bring in competition. In fact, they just shed salary, moved on from Allen Robinson, who really wasn't in Cooper Kupp's way at all. But fourth wide receiver off the board. And I think, honestly, that's a tier in its own. I do believe that Chase and Hill and Kupp are inside that same tier. Chase, as I said yesterday, is just a touchdown machine. Over 20 touchdowns over the past couple seasons, 13 as a rookie, 9 last year, only played 12 games, was certainly well on his way to maybe topping what he did as a rookie. Still ended up with 1,000 yards, Ja'Marr Chase, through those 12 games. Not going to have the same type of volume as Justin Jefferson or, you know, Cooper Kupp. But as for Tyreek Hill, you know, last year, 16.9 fantasy points per game, which was third behind Kupp, behind Jefferson. Chase was 16.6. Devontae Adams is down this list at 16.8. I have some question marks about the quarterback play with Jimmy Garoppolo. I think it's going to be a run-first offense. You bring in Jacoby Myers as well. Hunter Renfrow didn't offer a whole lot last year. If he's healthy, I think he can play an Edelman role, who's now on the coaching staff there. Of course, he is former Pat with Josh McDaniels. But ultimately, I am worried about the quarterback play. I'm worried about Jimmy. I don't know if he's going to be ready to go week one. I think he will, honestly, but there are reports that he may not be ready until training camp, if that. But it is a downgrade at the quarterback position. Say what you want about Derek Carr. Those two guys were on the same page, and you know they were on the same page at Fresno State as well. I said page, not Prage. Diggs, 8.1, fifth wide receiver off the board. AJ Brown, Adams there, CeeDee Lamb. I think that is another tier. Like, that's kind of the second tier. We'll get to my rankings in a little bit and see how they're different. Garrett Wilson at wide receiver 9, Amon-Ra St. Brown wide receiver 10, Jalen Waddle at wide receiver 11, Chris Olave had wide receiver 12 going as pick 20.7. So you have the 12 wide receivers here going inside the first two rounds, before the first two rounds are over, inside the top 20. So I agree with that. I'd like to get myself an alpha wide receiver, you know, especially in best ball formats. You want to stack, and I think there's value at the running back position, which we've addressed on this show before. Let's dive deeper, Kwan, and get into 13 to 24. Should have kept Stidham. I don't know about that. He did have a decent game there with Stidham, but I don't know. Okay, Devontae Smith. They need to have a backup plan, and it can't be Hoyer. I'll tell you that. It's going to be another long year, and Las Vegas. Devontae Smith, wide receiver 13. T. Higgins, wide receiver 14. DK Metcalf, 15. Calvin Ridley here going at pick 32.7 on average, slightly early in my opinion. Deebo Samuel, wide receiver 17. Amari Cooper, wide receiver 18. DeAndre Hopkins, who we addressed yesterday. We had the NFL draft odds. Actually, was this the DraftKings odds of what his next team is going to be? The Bills were favored at plus 300, and then we had the Chiefs there. And as I mentioned yesterday with Hopkins, you know, last year, fantasy points per game, wide receiver 10, only Justin Jefferson and Cooper Kupp had more targets per game than DeAndre Hopkins. He's never been a great route runner. He's never been able to separate, but he can win those 50-50 contested catches. He can be a safety valve for a quarterback, and he can be a nice target inside the red zone. I still think he has upside to be a low-end wide receiver one, depending on his team. He's certainly going to demand the ball. But if he went to Buffalo or Kansas City, I would certainly like him in this range. Christian Watson, wide receiver 20, 40.5 on average. Mike Williams, 43.4, excuse me, on average. Jerry Jeudy as wide receiver 22. Keenan Allen as wide receiver 23. And DJ Moore as wide receiver 24. As for this list, seeking the value, you know, I like those first three guys. You know, Devontae Smith finished inside the top 10 last year in terms of receiving yards. He had the eighth most, just shy of 1,200, even with AJ Brown there. I mean, he's just a terrific route runner, great hands. It's going to be a good offense again this season. So him and T. Higgins as number twos on their teams, these guys can still finish as wide receiver one. So, you know, if you don't get AJ or you don't get Jamar Chase, you can still have yourselves a pretty decent stack, you know, a Cincinnati stack or a Philadelphia stack in terms of best ball and redraft only. I think these guys are fine. Like if they're your wide receiver two or your wide receiver one, I think that's certainly okay. As for DK Metcalf last season, in terms of just overall yardage, he had the 15th most, just behind Garrett Wilson and Christian Kirk in terms of fantasy points per game. DK Metcalf was down the list and at wide receiver 27, but he had a better campaign last year with Geno Smith than he did in his final season with Russell Wilson. Now I know Russell Wilson suffered some injuries and, you know, he missed some time, but last year he had a thousand yards in 17 games. In 2021, he was just under 1,000 yards. Now he had more touchdowns. He had a career high 12 touchdowns in 2021. Last year, only six, so maybe partly on Geno Smith, but he was a little bit more productive with the targets. He had a career high 141 targets and 90 receptions. DK Metcalf is still an alpha, despite the fact JSN is now on the squad and Tyler Lockett. Okay, we'll get into, you know, we'll get into my rankings because I want to address some of these other guys that are on this list into my rankings. Lee brings up a question here, which we'll get to in a second, Lee. So my rankings, Justin Jefferson up at the top, not breaking any news. Jamar Chase, again, he's not going to have the same type of volume as the other guys. And Tyreek Hill did prove to us that he's quarterback proof no matter if Tua goes down. I think they got a better backup in Mike White in case they have to go to the backup. But Tyreek is just, he's so explosive. He's a game changer. 1,700 yards in his first year in Miami. Didn't miss a beat without Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid in Kansas City. He had 170 targets. My goodness, he had a fantastic season. Cooper Kupp, of course, a little bit of risk there. I think it's certainly worth the risk. Stephon Diggs, as of now, certainly the alpha there. If DeAndre Hopkins goes there, we may have to bump him down a little bit. CeeDee Lamb, I have ahead of A.J. Brown. Now, A.J. Brown had more yards last year, 146 targets and 88 grabs. CeeDee Lamb had 156 targets and 107 catches. And you got to remember that Dak missed some time last year. Even bringing in Brandon Cooks, they lost Dalton Schultz. I think he's going to be the bona fide number one. There's no question about that. But I think he's just going to have more volume, more targets. It's close. I'm splitting hairs between the two guys. I think they're in the same tier, but that's why I have CD ahead of AJ. Talked about the concerns I have for Devontae Adams. I still think he's like the best wide receiver in football, if not number two behind JJ. I would say he's still the best in the game. Amon-Ra St. Brown, you know, in the slot, had such a fantastic season last year, 106 catches, over 1,100 yards. Not a big touchdown guy in the slot, only six, but no Jameson Williams for the first little bit of the season. DJ Chark has moved on. TJ Hawkinson was on the squad for the first half of the year. Amon-Ra is just he's a stud, man. He is a lock and loaded wide receiver one. And in a full PPR league, I may even bump ahead of Adams. Jalen Waddle in there as well, just like Tyreek Hill proved that, you know, quarterback proof, a very explosive, just under 1,400 yards, eight touchdowns for him. a really good campaign. I just expect Miami to, you know, be as dominant on offense as they were last year, as long as Tua's under center. Garrett Wilson, great year, you know, with piss poor play at the quarterback position. I said that last year. Now, there's no question. You know, Aaron Rodgers near the end of his career, but this is an upgrade at the quarterback position. Garrett Wilson, I know it's Nathaniel Hackett. He brought in Randall Cobb, brought in Alan Lazard, but Garrett Wilson's going to be the alpha there, and he's a really, really good wide receiver. Remember last year when he was going as like wide receiver 40 and Elijah Moore was going as like wide receiver 12 and 20? I just didn't get that. T. Higgins in there for me at 12. Let's dig deeper. Let's go to 13 to 24. Devontae, I already really gave my respects for Devontae inside the top 10 receiving yards. I just think he belongs there. I think, you know, I don't know if people will have him as aggressively ranked. I can see him in the 15, 16 range. As for Chris Olave, a really nice rookie campaign from him. 15 games. He had 119 targets, 72 grabs, 1,000 yards, only 4 touchdowns, but he had a lot of air yards last season. He was among the leaders. He was getting targeted deep down the field, and Derek Carr is more accurate than Andy Dalton. Don't tell me that Andy Dalton's better than Derek Carr. I'm not buying it. Last year, I do believe, was an outlier campaign for Derek Carr. He was among the leaders in interceptions, but he's always been an accurate quarterback over the course of his career. He's got a good offensive line. He's got a multiple running backs. He's got a good defense. For the first time in his career, he's got a top 10 defense. And we can't trust Michael Thomas. We just can't trust him, unfortunately, to stay healthy. So Chris Olave could fall into just more work this year in year number two. Learning the offense a little bit more. It's going to be a different offense with Derek Carr, but I think it's an upgrade, again, like I said, at the quarterback position. Christian Watson, actually, Amari Cooper. I got to give some love to Amari Cooper. This guy was an absolute steal in Jake's Flex League. I took him as wide receiver 42 last year. He ends up finishing inside the top 12 in receiving yards, just under 1,200. He had 9 receiving touchdowns. He had 78 grabs. In terms of fantasy points per game, Amari Cooper was down just a little bit at wide receiver 15. But remember, he didn't play his whole season with Deshaun Watson. It wasn't Deshaun Watson to start the season in Cleveland. Now, Deshaun Watson, maybe he shakes off the rust a little bit. Hadn't played football in a couple of years. It's going to be more of a pass-happy offense. Amari Cooper is a stud. Dallas shouldn't have let this guy go. He's definitely the number one option. They got other guys there that can cut into, you know, who can be the number two, Donovan Peoples-Jones. Elijah Moore's now there is a great buy low. But Amari Cooper, if DeAndre Hopkins goes there, it's going to certainly cut into what Cooper can bring to the table. But ultimately, Cooper is just he's a stud wideout that a lot of people just overlook every single time. Christian Watson, he is my favorite target in this range. You saw that he was going roughly wide receiver 20. I'm not worried about the quarterback play. I think he's going to be an alpha. As I said last year on this show, he does remind me of Mike Evans. He's very boomer bust. He can kind of blow the top off. He can get some contested catches. He can run some slant routes, which we saw with Jordan Love against the Eagles when he took like a 70-yard catch to the house. And I just think he's the real deal. He's a definite target of mine, and I think he could finish as a top 12 wide receiver in fantasy football. Deebo Samuel, DJ Moore. I have a little bit of questions about Deebo Samuel with the quarterback play there. And, you know, now that CMC is there, he's going to, you know, steal a little bit of what Deebo has done over the past couple of years of running inside the red zone and things like that. DJ Moore has these are the guys that have more receiving yards over DJ Moore since 2019. Adams, Diggs, Hill, Kupp, Jefferson, and AJ Brown. Now, he doesn't have the touchdowns as those other guys. He only has 19 over that span. Other guys like Adams got 48. The other guys are living in the 30s. JJ's got 25, only been in the league for a minute. But this is a good quarterback. Don't let anybody tell you Justin Fields is not good, a good quarterback. He's going to improve as a passer, just like Hurts did when they brought in AJ Brown, just like Allen did when they brought in Stephon Diggs. He may not be as good as those two quarterbacks, but he's going to improve as a passing quarterback. And he's very explosive after the catch. He doesn't need a whole lot of work. 63 grabs last season, 888 yards. He had 118 targets. My goodness, like, get him a quarterback that can throw him the football. And I think he has one now. I'm in on DJ Moore, and people aren't going to be in on him because they don't like Fields, but he's going to command a lot of targets, more than Mooney and more than Claypool. He's going to be the number one option for Justin Fields. And the way that Fields can move around in the pocket and extend plays, my goodness, you're going to have more. You're going to see some big games from DJ Moore, maybe a little boomer bust, not going to score a lot of touchdowns, but I think he's going to eclipse 1,000 yards. And I think he's going to catch over 70 balls. Keenan Allen, Jerry Jeudy, Chris Godwin, Tyler Lockett, Calvin Ridley. Let's break there and we'll dive into the sleepers, and I'll get to that question about Ridley. Just want to keep the balance of the show because I promised Game Plus we would. So we're going to break and get into those final four just a little bit more so about Calvin Ridley, and we'll tie into the sleepers as well. Keep her locked. Welcome back in. A couple questions here. Maddie says, is he going to regret having super low ownership on Deebo, Williams, Judy come December? I barely touched him so far in underdog. I have no shares of Deebo or Williams. Muck Williams, I think he's a good candidate for... I think he's a good candidate for like best ball leagues, but I probably stay away from Mike Williams in my redraft leagues. I think it's all about roster construction, but he hasn't been able to stay on the field. He's very boom or bust. Now you bring in Quentin Johnston. I'm okay with you not having shares of those first two guys. I like Judy quite a bit. I really do. Like last year, Jerry Judy, just under 1,000 yards in 15 games, certainly offered more than Cortland Sutton did. I don't know. There just was this disconnect in Denver between Russell Wilson and Cortland Sutton. I really thought those two would be fantastic, but Jerry Judy seemed to be the guy that Russ was going to. Jerry Judy's a better route runner than Cortland Sutton. He finds himself open a little bit more, and I just think it's going to be a better offense. It has to be. It was like one of the worst offenses in football last year. Nathaniel Hackett. See you later. Have fun with that, Jets Nation. Sean Payton is going to find ways to be creative with this offense and make it flow. So I actually like that Denver stack. Judy and like Dalton Schultz, Greg Dulcich. I think he can play a similar role that Jimmy Graham played in Sean Payton's offense. But as for the other guys, I have no problem with you kind of bypassing them. I think, again, you can make a case for anybody in best ball, but there's more of the injury-prone players you can go and roll out in best ball and draft them and take shots on them because they do have high ceilings. But if you are drafting some guys early on that are very kind of risky, boom or bust, maybe you want to stay away from a guy like Williams, right? Like, I don't know, guys that come to mind, like, let's see, Will Fuller and DeSean Jackson. Like, those are two guys that come to mind, and I know this is probably not going to help you, but though, like, drafting two players like that on your roster a few years ago, like, you have very boom or bust guys. You may win a couple weeks, but you can't have too many. You got to have some floor guys, and I don't know. I would view Deebo as a floor guy, and Williams as, like, a very boom or bust. And then Amon-Ra, yeah, he does love himself, stopping at the one, but he's a stud. He'll find a way to score more touchdowns. Let's bring up the rankings again, if you don't mind, Quan, just 13 to 24 and Ridley a lock over Kirk. I don't think so. I don't think Ridley is a lock over Kirk. Now, I have him at 24 and I have Kirk at 27. My guy Jake Seeley has Kirk over Ridley. Our guy Jeff Ratcliffe has Kirk over Ridley. In fact, most of our crew over at FTM Fantasy has Ridley in the late 20s and early 30s. Now, Ridley only caught, I mean, he didn't play last year for one. And then he only had 31 catches in 2021. So he's 3 years removed from what was a really good season from Calvin Ridley, 1,374 yards and 9 touchdowns. He had 10 as a rookie, 7 in his sophomore season. He's a really good wide receiver, 90 plus grabs in his first 3 seasons in the NFL. I like him as a wideout. I think, you know, it could really work with Trevor Lawrence and Doug Peterson. And I think this offense can go toe to toe with anybody, but Kirk is not going anywhere. He had 1,000 yards last year, 1,100 on 80-plus catches. He had 8 touchdowns. They brought back Evan Engram on the franchise tag. They also have Zay Jones. So I think he's getting overdrafted a little bit, like in that 15-16 range. This is a little bit too steep for me, but I don't think he's a lock, by all means, over Kirk. I think these guys could be very similar to what we've seen over the past with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. I don't think they're going to be as good as, say, you know, T. Higgins and Jamar Chase or A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, as both guys finishing as top 12. But they could both be in this mid to late teen range where Ridley and Kirk are just kind of having very similar numbers. I think that Ridley has a higher ceiling than Kirk. I think, you know, we could see him with more yards and they can blow the top off the defense. Kirk is going to play in the slot. So we could see bigger games from Ridley and more touchdowns, but it's very close. It's very close. As of now, Kirk is the value. Man, I went long. Sleepers. Let's show them. We got to show them. We got to show the sleepers. So again, in my opinion, a sleeper is somebody who is going to outdo their draft position. I looked at wide receivers out the top 30 at their own position. Now, Jordan Addison is picking up steam where maybe he's going to be overdrafted at some point, but 66.9 on average. These are underdog ADPs. George Pickens, Treylon Burks, Jahan Dotson, all in the same range and in the same tier for me. Burks has the opportunity to be the one for sure. There's not a lot going on there in Tennessee, but I try to get one of those three. Pickens, I just think, is a terrific wide receiver. I'm not a big Deontay Johnson guy. Pickens is the guy that's going to score the touchdowns. It's the Pickett to Pickens connection. We saw it last year, and I think he's going to grow as one of the better wide receivers in the NFL. I think we could be talking about him as a rock solid wide receiver too next season if Pickett can take that jump forward. There's some questions there for sure. Johan Dotson, touchdown machine, a bunch of touchdowns in a handful of games. He's not the number one, and there's some quarter questions at the quarterback position, but I do believe that he is a strong target around pick 80. Juju Smith-Schuster, I'm not crazy about TikTok boy, but there's not a lot going on here in New England. I think he makes for a really good target in a full point setting, a PPR setting. I think he can catch 80 plus passes inside the slot there, whether it's Mac Jones or Zappy. I don't know who's going to be the quarterback. I think it's going to be Mac Jones all year long, but I think Juju is like not a sexy pick, but like an undervalued safe pick there outside the top 100. All these other guys I'm willing to take shots on, you know, Sky Moore, Nico Collins, Alec Pierce, Jaden Reed, could be some growing pains there. Maybe he's behind Romeo Dubs to start, but I think in 2 years, he's the best wide receiver on Green Bay. And you guys know how much I love Christian Watson. John Mechie, the third, didn't play last year, recovering from cancer, beat it on the field, ready to go. I think he's a stud. I think he's great. And then Michael Wilson, I think, is a pretty good target as well. There certainly could be some growing pains this year. And for Puka Nacku, great name to say. I struggle with it sometimes, but the Rams didn't do a whole lot. You know, after Cooper Kupp, who is it? We saw it last year. Who was it? Van Jefferson? Nope. Tutu Atwell? Nope. It could be Nacua right away. Michael Wilson could fall into targets pretty early in his NFL career because DeAndre Hopkins is gone. It's just the quarterback play is really spotty. Hollywood Brown has had, you know, numerous injuries over the course of his career. Rondell Moore, same sort of deal. I think he's a great dynasty keeper only pick. But don't be surprised if we're talking about him and Mechie as like waiver wire pieces. We'll dive deeper into this a little bit more. I don't think Thielen is done, but I don't think he's going to offer a whole lot there in Carolina. We got a break. We got a couple MLB picks to wrap up Mean Streets. Hang tight. Focus in on some late night action here for the Game Plus Network crew. James Paxton over 5.5 strikeouts at -112. Innings have been hard to come by for Paxton over the course of his career, especially lately, but he does have a 9.95 K per nine. He's had at least a double digit K per nine every year since 2017. He's had at least 5 strikeouts in his first 3 starts. He had 9 in his first outing. He's got 19 and 14 innings this year. A matchup against the Reds, who have the 9th highest strikeout rate in baseball, striking out at 24%. Blake Snell, taking a shot on Blake Snell. 5.5 is just too low. We're getting plus money here, a matchup against Miami. They're in the middle of the pack in terms of strikeouts, but I like the plus 108 for Blake Snell. I think the Jays roll against Julio Teheran today, who hasn't started in quite some time. It's actually been a long time since Julio Teheran has taken the ball, and he's going to get the call here from Milwaukee. In fact, he had one outing this season, 5 innings. It was a good outing. He only has 10 innings since 2020, and he only has 41 innings since 2019. But what I know from Teheran is this guy gives up bombs. These are some of the home runs he's given up over the course of his campaign. 22, 22, 27, 22, 31, 26, 22, and had the 12 and 31 innings when he was with the Halos in 2020. So I like the Jays to score 6 runs. And I like Bo Bichette, who leads the Bluebirds with a 320 average and 8 dingers against right-handed pitching. So I'm taking Bo at +650 to go yard. Good luck around the diamond. We'll talk to you soon. Cheers.